Young Jeezy. King and boy K.
Yeah. 8732, what it do?
That's right, keep clapping, y'all.
Keep me, I got you.
DJ, keep playing with us. Turn it up.
Let's go get him, Jeezy. Oh, oh, oh. Let's
you know
get
we trap all day, play all night. Oh. This is the life of a, the life of a.
Hey.
Go get up.
Good morning, check, check, check. You are listening to CKLN Rude Awakening 88.1 at 88.1 FM here in the greater Toronto area, extending to as far as Buffalo, as far as we know. I've had some truckers call in on the show before from the United States saying, hey, you guys are nuts, but interesting, but nuts. I'm back with Mark Bills, and I host the show from the summer of 06 to the summer of 08, Tuesday's Rude Awakening. And on this particular Tuesday, you are listening to, again, CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM, online, Rogers Cable Box 947. It is Tuesday, the 13th of April, 2010, and I got a feeling that you know what's going on some level, but you're acting like you don't know. I just, something's putting that thought in my head right now. I don't know what it is. I don't think it's a negative thing. I don't think it's a positive thing. I just think it's something that could lead to something better. And, well, that's optimistic. It's no pretension, it's friendship. Me nemesis is soon nemesis. Same for him, it's just media. See the damage, just images. But the shit is no gimmicks. It's blood in and blood out. When it's beef, you just gotta know when the blood in and blood out. If there's a problem, we solve it. We don't resolve it. It usually just evolves into one big brawl. And we all get involved in it. We should all get a merit. It's much beef we inherit. And wear it like a badge of honor. Pass it around and share it. And let it go to whoever's holding the most current beef on their shoulders. And the soldiers got their backs and it's over. But tonight, we ain't coming here to beef with nobody. We came to party. Thanks, Cash is a Mr. Ferrari. So it's shady at the mistake. Back in that ass, you was asking this song. What kind of bizarre possession is that? And here on the 13th of April, 2010, we'll reveal a little bit of what I was up to yesterday. Pleasant existence. There's nothing like being a bum. And at this point, I am just a bum with ideas, all I ever have been. But I didn't feel it necessary to leave my my regular 6-day-a-week, 8-hour-a-day employee to work on things on a regular basis. And that includes magical internet work. That includes trying to organize some activism. That includes some personal interpretation development through music, hosting my radio show, and other forms of analysis. But hey, what are you gonna do? I'm walking around the streets of Toronto yesterday, and all of a sudden, chemtrails everywhere. My goodness. From around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was just wandering around taking pictures of chemtrails. And nice day to do so. And they are fascinating features of the skyline. For those of you folks who don't know, I've been on this for a minute now. I wasn't particularly concerned about it, until the weekly chemtrail attacks started, on the greater Toronto area, about a month ago. And it's been happening every week, every couple of weeks. They usually spray on Mondays, and then it starts getting colder, and then it's about 3-4 days of rain after that, as is to be expected based on the 12-year history of chemtrails. So what's a chemtrail? Well, to define a chemtrail, we got to define a contrail first. When airplanes are flying through the sky, their hot jet exhaust sometimes meets the cold air up there. And if there's enough humidity, you'll see a bit of the condensation take place when the hot engine air meets the cold humid air, and this is pretty common. It's just like a car muffler in the winter. I've made this point a number of times because I do try and speak here on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays as BK, aka Black Krishna, your host. I want to say things, not to just prove I can say them, but say them in a way that's so simple that anybody has the confidence to pass them on. So if you were to explain the difference between contrails and chemtrails, you just say, look, all right, it's just basically, there shouldn't be, much, emissions from anything, from a car, from a plane, whatever. But, there's going to be some. Fair enough. There's going to be some. But essentially, what that little trail you see behind planes is just different temperatures, the hot jet engine, the cold air, and there's enough moisture there for us to see that. And that should just be like right behind the plane. It should be like, it should last maybe 30 seconds, 10 seconds, or just literally be right behind the plane like the wake of a boat. But the chemtrails I saw yesterday in the, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 minute videos that I took, were in fact lines across the sky above downtown Toronto, giant X patterns above downtown Toronto. And if you watch these lines for long enough, and there's some phenomenal, time lapse photography of this from around the world, but just over Toronto yesterday, I'm noticing. If you watch them after 10, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, depending on atmospheric conditions like wind and you know, how much sun they're getting, the chemtrails will dissipate into clouds. They'll turn into clouds. They'll turn into, you know, they don't look like organic, fluffy, big, you know, juicy, you know, clouds. They look like big, hazy kind of, big hazy clouds in the sky is the best way I can put it. And for people out there who say, oh, no, that's not a chemtrail, it's just a contrail, you're crazy. When was the last time, you know, when have you ever heard contrails turning into clouds? A little bit of moisture, a little bit of the temperature mixing thingy there, and then all of a sudden, boom, you got clouds everywhere. But that is what happened yesterday in Toronto from 2 till around 7 o'clock. I was shooting the chemtrails, massive chemtrail just to the east of the Ontario Parliament Building, Queen's Park at Bay and College. So I was chilling out there for a while, shooting some of that chemtrail and those chemtrails, some of the crazy stuff going on in the hospital district, and chemtrails over the CBC. I was down near the Sky Dome shooting some chemtrails, a giant X on the CBC building, on the west face of the CBC building, as the chemtrails blasting off. And it's like, wow, I wonder if you guys see that giant chemtrail X, you know, painted on your building. You know, all it needs is a skull on top of there, to complete the look, that's been promoted in fashion for the last couple of years. The skull shirts and skull caps and skull toques and skull purses and skull shoes and skull candy headphones and on and on. All to help dehumanize it. So there's giant X patterns there, and then front spadina, I took a bunch more, and it's amazing, you know, what's going on here, with respect to the chemtrailing. Because it's the type of thing that truly proves, you know, the Orwellian universe. You know, you get a guy who's taking pictures of these things, and then you get other people to some degrees noticing, to some degrees not. And you can't blame people for not noticing, in the sense that, you know, if you don't know, you don't know. If you do know that you should notice these things, and you have researched these things, and you are aware of what chemtrails are, again, seen since about 98, there's an amazing movie called Don't Talk About the Weather. I talked about it a bit yesterday. Definitely find online, as a British filmmaker did a phenomenal job chopping together a narrative that included him seeing these things for the first time in North England. And showing them to his neighbors, and his neighbors going, you're nuts. Don't worry about that stuff. You know, I've got other things to worry about. And feeling alone, he made his way to the magical internets. And after doing some initial research, he discovered the term chemtrail. And then after he discovered the term chemtrail, he stumbled into, of course, years and years of research by many people. And so he's chopped together his narrative of this. He's chopped together a bunch of other great YouTube clips, from people around the world, showing different chemtrails, close-up shots showing the planes. If you look at the planes, and I got a couple of close-up shots of my little handheld silver Canon camera there, but it's not going to do it justice, obviously. But if you look at the planes, yeah, and you look at some of the shots, especially in the movie Don't Talk About the Weather, you'll see that they're spraying something that has nothing to do with what's coming out of their engines. Because there's extra nozzles attached to the plane, and there's basically four plumes, four trails coming off these planes. You know, they kind of mush into one towards the back of the plane, but initially there's often four things pumping out, you know, these chemicals. Now, it's been speculated before, and I've speculated and played clips in this new show, and confirmed to the degree that we can confirm things, that there are bits of aluminum, barium, there are other heavy metals and radioactive particles that fall to Earth and that are foreign to the areas where they fall, that are, you know, ostensibly in these chemtrails. And and when you factor that in with the cancer bats posters out there all over Toronto, and other cancer ads, and, you know, one day we'll find a cure, and you know, we're raising more money than ever and all this stuff, it's just like, you know, there's a giant game being played, and to figure out parts of it and connect them with the others is to figure out the whole thing. So not saying that I've done this authoritatively yet. Certainly there are interpretations out there that are more beneficial here in the early part of the 21st century than others. And we're going to have to answer at some point, as individuals in the city, as individuals who consider ourselves responsible, if we even care to anymore. But as individuals who have a chance to react to these things in very public ways, without being, you know, hauled off, you know, stuffed in a black duffel bag and hauled off to a black site in Eastern Europe, to be tortured. You can get away with speaking about these things in public right now, you know, while we still have an environment that allows you to. So do keep that in mind there, because we will be judged at some point based on what we did. You know, when the chemtrail attacks started on the city of Toronto in the spring of 2010, what did we do? And that's going to be a question that we're going to have to answer. And the sooner we answer that, the better. Because if 6 months passes by and if this gets normal, it'll be just like all of our other normal reactions. You know, our reactions to being sprayed like bugs are going to be just like everything else. And there's reasons for this. There's chemtrails placed in advertising, chemtrails placed in TV shows, chemtrails placed in video games. There is a giant plot by people out there to poison us with these chemtrails. And there's no denying that. So how does this break down? Well, here on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, I do try and talk about the New World Order. The reason I'm so on this chemtrail tip is because it is important, and I'm already seeing signs that we're not going to react to this, and we're just going to, you know, and we're going to think that, you know, the strong thing to do is to get used to it. You know, even though you can see that up there, even though you can see them spraying on a perfectly nice day, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and guys and girls walk around in shorts and t-shirts, and I got my winter coat with me because I just know that, you know, by the evening it's going to get cold. Because when you cover the skies in chemical clouds, that's what happens. And in the Orwellian perception that ignorance is strength, there are people that are going to be desperately trying their hardest to be badasses by ignoring this stuff and say, screw you, I don't care, I just don't give a, I don't give a F, I don't give a crap, I just don't give a crap. You know, like, I'm a man. I'm a man because I don't give a damn. And that's the new social engineering when it comes to this crap. So, because this is such a universal and easy issue to get, the chemtrail issue, and because even though there were chemtrails over the CBC building and Globe and Mail building and Queen's Park, Ontario Provincial Legislature building, you know, these people aren't going to talk about it. They might if we do. And so I recommend taking your little handheld camera, taking your little, you know, whatever, and just taking shots of these and going, what the hell is that? And inviting a conversation that asks that question and helping create a conversation that asks that question. You don't have to co-sign any theories. If you haven't done a lot of research on this, you don't know that Espanola, Ontario sued over this a few years ago. Libby Davies talked about this MP from Vancouver in 2000. Dennis Kucinich had a bill in Congress to try and stop these. And there have been admissions everywhere. Recently, admissions in the European Parliament, where one of the European members of Parliament's going, hey, what are those things? Are they poisonous? Are they going to kill us or what? And it's important to understand, you know, how can they get away with this? You know, aren't there good people inside the government? Aren't there good people inside the military who blow the whistle? Well, to give you an idea of what happens, then I'm gonna break down the case of Sybelle Edmonds. She was an FBI translator, and she blew the whistle on the fact that senior members in the FBI were protecting potential terrorists. And this is the Corbett Report from March 12th, 2010, just about a month ago, when Sybelle Edmonds did an interview. And broke down what happens to whistleblowers who try and blow the whistle on corruption inside intelligence agencies inside the United States of America.
Hello, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 12th day of March 2010, and today I'm honored to be joined on the line by Sybelle Edmonds, a FBI translator who was fired from her position after blowing the whistle on the explosive activities of bureau officials and top U.S. government officials that she uncovered while discharging her duties in that position. She can be found at justicecitizen.com and boilingfrogspost.com. Sybelle Edmonds, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, today I wanted to talk specifically about S-372, a draconian new piece of legislation that's making its way through the Senate that would threaten to strip what very few protections national security whistleblowers enjoy under the current Whistleblower Protection Act. But before we get into that, I think it would be instructive for listeners and viewers if you talked a little bit about your own experience blowing the whistle and the various problems that you've faced attempting to blow the whistle on FBI malfeasance and government corruption. So in your own words, can you tell us about your experience and the problems that you've faced bringing that experience to the light of public scrutiny?
Sure. Let me start with the whistleblowing aspect of it. And what I'm going to tell you actually is going to be something that you'll get to hear a lot from many whistleblowers, government whistleblowers. I really didn't think I was blowing the whistle. What I did was what actually I had taken the oath to do, and that was to report wrongdoing or criminal activities or government waste fraud management to the appropriate, in quote, appropriate authorities, which would be the Inspector General's Office. And since I worked for the FBI, the Inspector General's Office for the Justice Department, and to the appropriate committee, which in this case was House and the Senate Judiciary Committee and or Intelligence Committee. So, in my mind, at the time, I didn't even consider myself a whistleblower. I came across wrongdoings, and I took those issues to my supervisors, and my supervisor's supervisors, and their managers, and all the way up to the director of the Bureau, Federal Bureau of Investigations, and that is Director Mueller's office. And instead of acting on the issues that I reported, documented report, I started facing retaliation immediately. They started taking some of my tasks away. And in fact, at this time, I had not even gone to the Congress or the Inspector General's office. I was not even planning to do it. I thought if I were to report this to my superior and supervisors, it would just be an address. Well, that was not the case. In fact, this is the FBI. They accused me of disclosing this information to Congress, which I had not, and they sent agents to my home. They asked these agents to come and confiscate my home computer and my husband's computer, business computer, because they believed I had contacted congressional members by email and I had reported these issues. Well, they took my computer away, and they took it apart, and they couldn't find anything because I had not done so. About a week after that, they actually ordered me to take a polygraph to say whether or not I had disclosed this information, not to the public, not to the media, but to Congress, and this is the FBI. And they gave me two options, whether I would take the polygraph and pass, or I would fail, and if I didn't take the polygraph, they would fire me. That would be ground to fire me, to terminate my contract. This was when I decided, okay, I am being retaliated against. Where do I go? So I started doing my own research, and I believed at the time, and I was proven wrong later, that there were three channels to pursue, okay? One was within the executive branch, go to the, number one, Office of Professional Responsibility within the FBI that supposedly investigates FBI matters. Also within the executive branch, go to the Justice Department's Inspector General's office, you know, contact them, go meet with them, and confidentially disclose the fact that these were the issues I reported and this is how I'm being retaliated against. And within the Congress, go to the Judiciary Committee. And my other option, based on what I had researched, was to go and talk to an attorney and see if there is a need to pursue this in court. Okay, so basically you have the judicial, the legislative, and the executive branch. And looking at these options, I said, well, right now I don't have to go to court. Why am I going to court? they should address it. They are saying that Congress has the oversight responsibility. And also, they can hold people accountable. You know, they have the power of money for these agencies. And the Inspector General's office has been given the authority to investigate this. And that's exactly what I did. And that's when the real journey began, because the retaliation continued. And as soon as I went and disclosed this information, basically within a week, I was fired. And after that, I had basically since then 8 years. And I have lost the case in courts. The Congress, they refused to act upon this. And even though the Inspector General's office's own report, surprisingly, because they usually have whitewash report, they say they couldn't, you know, the report couldn't be conclusive or even not really factual findings. This was a very interesting case because the Inspector General's office issued a report saying that I was right. And the FBI, the only reason they retaliated against me and they fired me was because I had brought up these issues both internally and then to the Inspector General's office. Well, in the end, that didn't make any difference because it ended there. So I had a great glowing report from the Inspector General's office, and I had some glowing remarks initially. These were from, you know, bipartisan two senators from the Judiciary Committee at the time, Senator Grassley and Senator Leahy. They came publicly, and they said I was courageous and I was brave, and the FBI had to be turned upside down, and a lot of hoorays from Congress, and how awful this thing was, that they were waiting for Inspector General's office's report, and once they got that report, they were going to do this. Well, it was nothing but sugarcoating the case, because in the end, they didn't do anything. They refused to hold hearings, and they refused to press the issue with the FBI, and not as an isolated case. This has been the case with almost every single whistleblower, for federal government whistleblowers, especially with the national security-related agencies such as the FBI and CIA, etc.
And we're back, CKLN listeners. That, again, was Ms. Sybil Edmonds, courageous 9/11 whistleblower, who is basically blowing the whistle on a compartmentalized aspect. She doesn't say that she knows everything that happened on 9/11, and nobody in their right mind does. But she does say, as an FBI translator, that there were mistranslations and there was a protection of certain key potential terrorists suspects by people inside the FBI's office itself, because that's what they do. If you look at our Toronto 18 terror case here, you know, they had informants that basically think up entire plots, convince a bunch of patsies to go along with it, a bunch of people that are of questionable intelligence and character, and that's how these guys stay in business. The FBI, the CIA, the NSA, the CSIS here, RCMP, you know, they need to perpetuate threats in order to justify their existence as a response, and so that's what they do, and that's been the history of a large part of the 21st century false flag terrorism. So you start off the show with chemtrails. I did think it was important enough because it is ubiquitous enough, and there's lots of info on this. You can talk. There's, if you go to youtube.com/blackkrishnaverse, you'll see my videos from the last few weeks. But the case of Sybil Edmonds gives you an idea of what happens to people in positions of power and authority when they whistleblow. There's been American military whistleblowers. Same thing happened to him. Pat Tillman, a former NFL star who was basically writing letters home from the war in Afghanistan saying this is total BS. You know, I'm going to whistleblow. He got killed. And he got triple tapped in the head, basically three shots in the head. Unusual for friendly fire. But that was the excuse. It was just, oh, there's a firefight, and that guy who works, you know, same side as us, who we all know is a football star from the NFL, happened to get shot three times in the head. So tons of evidence around that. And what does this mean? Is this all to be hopeless? No, it's not to be hopeless. It is to demonstrate the fact that we need to expose these things ourselves on the outside. when we're not part of some giant national security or media or corporate or medical, industrial, or political apparatus. You know, we need to talk about these things. Can we talk about chemtrails? Sure. Can the pilot who just laced us with toxic chemicals talk about them? A little tougher. But if we talk about him, then maybe he'll stop getting as many missions to fly. And we'll get some answers. You can't pull this kind of crap in our city. But they are pulling all sorts of crap with our minds, including convincing us the war in Afghanistan is a good war. And that's why, from the Alex Jones Show, Jason Burmis from the 8th of April, 2010, interviewing, veteran journalist, veteran journalist, activist, Professor Peter Dale Scott on why our own governments are promoting the opium trade worldwide and production in Afghanistan.
At the time, this New York Times article had not come out yet, and you were actually alluding to this in our interview, saying that there had been some Russian journalists and sources out there that said that we were very much involved in the opium trade in Afghanistan. And then we had this headline, October 28, 2009, brother of Afghan leader said to be paid by the CIA. And this is, of course, Ahmed Wali Karzai. You go into this later in the article, Peter. But how is it that we've set up an infrastructure that is openly using a drug lord who just happens to be our puppet dictator's brother as the lead opium dealer in the region? How does this happen?
Well, twice over, first time in 1979 and again in 2001 after 9/11, the CIA went into Afghanistan. It didn't have very many assets there to choose from, and the assets it chose happened to be drug traffickers. And its hands were not totally free in this matter, because the first time, which was the crucial decision in 1979, it was trying to stay as remotely from operations as possible. So it supplied a great deal of money to what we call the ISI, which is the Pakistan Intelligence Service. Pakistan was actually frightened of Afghan independence because there's an unresolved border issue between Afghanistan and Pakistan. So Pakistan gave the money, or more than half of the money, to its preferred client who had a base in Pakistan but not in Afghanistan. And he became, with the aid of the CIA money, perhaps the world's largest heroin trafficker in the 1980s. He not only was dealing in opium, but he developed heroin labs in ISI territory in Pakistan. And if you go back to that period, 1979, what we call the Golden Crescent wasn't a factor in the world drug traffic at all, which is amazing when you consider that now something like 90 or 93% of the world's heroin is coming from Afghanistan itself. And it went up very quickly from like an insignificant amount to, 2007 was the peak year, 8,200 tons. You mentioned that that was a huge buildup from 2001, mm-hmm. when it was only 185 tons. I think in all fairness, we ought to compare the 8,000 figure with 2000 rather than 2001, because that 185-ton figure was a record low in the last 2 decades, because the Taliban was desperate to get world recognition. It was only recognized by 3 countries at that time. And so it just made a point of using its own brutal methods to stamp out the drug trade in Afghanistan. 185 tons was from the most of that, nearly all of it, was from the area of Afghanistan that the Taliban did not yet control. And then in 2001, we went back in, so Washington, made a conscious decision to ally itself with the Northern Alliance, who were responsible for the drugs still being grown in Afghanistan. They went in with the aid of drug traffickers. And that has colored the nature of the relationship we have in that country ever since. This is not the first time. I mean, something very like this happened in Vietnam. America went into Vietnam in the 1950s, had no Italy, known him as Yem, and with very little popular base, he relied on his brother. This is just as Karzai relies on his brother Ahmed Wali to deliver the votes, organize the countryside, also be a CIA asset, which he was.
And let me just stop you there, Peter, because that's actually in the mainstream news just yesterday. I was watching Wolf Blitzer, and the Cafferty Report was coming on, and they were discussing how not only does Waleed Karzai deal this opium, but he also rigs the elections for his brother. They were laughing about it. It was like an inside joke to them. They said, oh, I wonder if his brother is helping to rig the elections. This isn't very funny to me.
Well, history repeated becomes farce, I guess, because this is what we had in Vietnam. No Dinh Nu ran the drug trade, was the CIA asset, and faked an election for his brother No Dinh Diem. It's painful that we say that we're doing this as a fight for democracy. It's actually meaningless to bring democracy to a country like Afghanistan. It's not even really a state in our sense. It's a collection of tribes. And it always had a certain amount of violence built into it, but it was a much more benign state of affairs before we started meddling, and particularly before we pumped all this money in behind the drug traffic, because the drug traffickers are much more ruthless than the traditional tribal elders who have their own code of behavior. And the idea that we can just go into a country and impose something on it and expect people to like us is ridiculous. It's like the British Redcoats coming to America in the 1770s and expecting to get rid of these miscreants like George Washington. It wasn't going to happen.
I checked, I was the man on these streets. They call me residue, I leave blow on these beats. Got diarrhea flow, man, I shit on niggas. Even when I'm constipated, I still shit on niggas.
And we're back, CKLN listeners. We are back again. That was Peter Dale Scott on with Jason Burmis on the Alex Jones radio show. Jason Burmis has his own show. Talented young filmmaker with a film called Invisible Empire coming out soon. That does break down the invisible empire behind these changes and behind the Orwellian universe they get us to live in. Keep in mind that we are supposed to be over there fighting the Taliban, fighting the drug trade, and yet we're perpetuating the drug trade by working with the puppet president we installed's brother, who's the main drug dealer in Afghanistan. That is the twisted Orwellian universe they're selling us. So we got chemtrails out there. We can take pictures and videos of that. We got the drug war we can expose, a great film called American Drug War, and How Weed Won the West. There's a screening of How Weed Won the West put on by Conspiracy Culture, great book and DVD store here in Toronto at Queen and Roncesvalles. Go to conspiracyculture.com for details. And you can see the 420 screening of How Weed Won the West, and what the problems with the criminalization of marijuana and drugs in general are. Now, we've known this stuff for so long. We've known this stuff for years. I mean, Oregon, the state of Oregon, decriminalized marijuana in the late 70s for about a year and found no significant increase in use because people either smoke or they don't. And if you smoke, you can get it, you know, illegally, but easily. And if you don't, you just don't bother. And so they found, the state of Oregon found that there was no substantial increase in usage, but there was a substantial savings of tax dollars because they weren't putting all these cops on the tail of marijuana users. And of course they weren't trying to throw people in prison for it and so on. So, you can see the drug war is a joke. You can see the chemtrails are a joke, that, you know, you can't just say we're not seeing that. You know, you can't just say, you know, you didn't see that. These aren't the droids you're looking for, you know, out of Star Wars, you know, to try and fool us into not seeing these. And yet they try, and a lot of people are. So if you do see them, then by all means, it's the same thing as anything else. You know, if you see an old lady across, you know, trying to cross the street, and you're a young, healthy guy, help her get across the street. What does it cost you? You know, I mean, just it's this is common sense here. If you see the chemtrails, and you have some idea of what they are, you bother researching it, and you go, holy crap, they're spraying us with toxic chemicals for some unknown reasons. Then take pictures, take videos, post them up online, share them different places. I know one of my chemtrail videos, for some reason, you know, in the series from March 18th, I put about 11 up or something that day, but one of them was featured on RealGM.com, a basketball fan website where you can play a general manager who tries to assemble basketball teams. And because of that, it got an extra few hundred views, and now it's up to 600, 700 views, whereas some of the other videos in that series are 50 views, 100 views, and so on. And so you can share this information outside of quote-unquote conspiracy circles of people that are aware of the New World Order and rich and powerful people who control the banking industry, essentially, that lends money to the entire world and uses their control over the money supply to control the world. So, you know, if you know about the chemtrails, and or if you learn about them on shows like this or anywhere else, and then you see them in your neighborhood, then do feel free to document them at this time in history, because it's going to be important to understand, you know, what's going on here. We're being attacked on every level as the powers that be evil go for broke in the next year and a half or so till the expected 2012 UN world government. But what does today's Metro have to say? Because today's Metro for Tuesday, April 13th, 2010, is in my hot little hands here. And this is probably the most widely read newspaper in Toronto. And this is another example of how the people behind the control of our culture are trying to reduce our language. You know, I know that you know, I can't, you know, I have trouble sharing, you know, information that's 500-600 words, you know, emails and so on, talking about ideas, explaining things in more detail. You know, people don't have as much patience. Certainly they don't have as much patience for dealing with things that are a little bit stressful. Like, what do we do about the chemtrails? What do we do about the New World Order? You know, how do we get more people involved? You know, the tolerance for that conversation is being lowered. And in countries where the communists take over, and I've been talking about communists here in Communist Canada, and this is, as I perceive it, a giant globalist communist takeover, where they want to basically reduce most of the world, including the Western world, to a neo-feudalism, have us all poor, preferably poor and happy, so we don't cause too much trouble through various, you know, chemical spraying from the air, fluoridation of the water, silly propaganda on TV, promotion of drug use, anything to wreck our brains, so we don't cause them too much trouble. And not saying I don't like to wreck my brain, not even saying you shouldn't like to wreck yours. It's just that you should definitely keep enough working to defend yourself against these types of attacks and defend others where you live. So back to the cover of the Metro here. You know, what are people reading that caused them, you know, to be apathetic? What are people consuming that caused this kind of culture to be created? Is something worth investigating once in a while. So I'm going to get to that. Essentially, on the cover of the Metro, it says here, Learning Curve Special, pages 19 to 26, the very top. So let's take a look here. This is the very, very top, and it does say, you know, check it out. Take a look here. Aha! Take your job search online. The Internet offers many benefits for researching career options. they talk like this to an Internet-savvy generation, and they recycle the exact same tips over and over again. You ever seen a Men's Health magazine? It's the same magazine. Over and over again. And speaking of that, how the hell does Oprah get away with putting a picture of herself on the cover of her magazine every month? I mean, who can do that? You know, can I put like BK Monthly and put a picture out? You know, I don't have 30 million, 40 million viewers a day, I guess. But how does she get away with that? Well, in a culture that's encouraging narcissism, you know, even Oprah can act narcissistic and have it just normalized narcissism as opposed to be seen as strange. It's like, wait a minute, you've had a magazine for like 5 years and every issue you've been on the cover saying basically doing better than ever. This is nuts. So this is the Learning Curve section. 7 steps to keep you grounded in the hunt. Number one, breathe. Number two, meditate. Number three, use affirmations. Number four, practice yoga. Number five, aerobic exercise. Number six, timeouts. And number seven, use visualization. And it starts off, and this is by Ilva Van Buren for Metro Canada. Looking for work can be one of the toughest jobs you ever have to do. While it's important to establish good work habits, during this time, experts advise that you also build activities into your day that help reduce stress and keep your spirits high. Here are some to try, and the aforementioned examples are ones I gave you. So the powers that be evil that do have kind of a global agenda, which is why none of the major institutions or groups or activist groups or media organizations really reveals it, because they are all controlled. If you're not given daily orders, you can smell which way the wind's blowing. And if you're a reporter who works for one of the major media outlets in Toronto and you see the chemtrails and you've done a little research, then you might know they fall into a category of information you're not supposed to discuss. So, you'll keep your job and the city will get sprayed. And unless someone does something, we're all going to get covered in toxic chemicals and then not know why. We can't think later. But this is what you're going to see. You're going to see the new global business reality. It's based on Darwinism and evolutionary theories, which the elite are a fan of. Basically, survival of the fittest, as they talk about it. And the people at the top, the inbred families of psychopaths, basically super rich families and super psychopathic families, interbred and intermarried in order to keep their fortunes. If you were a king a few hundred years ago and you were used to running tyrannical dictatorships and amassing wealth through conquest of other peoples and other nations or tribes, and you had a kid, you didn't want that kid to turn out to be a pansy. You don't want that kid to be like lose all the crap. Like, hey, it's like if you're Bill Gates and you pass on Microsoft. You don't want your kid to just flub it up and lose and destroy the company and lose the family fortune. So you got to make sure that your kid is raised to be as much of or more of a psychopath than you are. And you got to make sure that kid breeds with another psychopath and marries another psychopath from another psychopathic family, so you can perpetuate the psychopathy through the generations. Passion into action here. So that's what they do. And as part of that, again, they are going for a global system of serfdom under their control, as these folks have managed to work together in an era of globalization, which couldn't happen if any major forces in the world didn't want to globalize. So that's the cover of the Metro there, Learning Curve special feature. And it says here, grant from Gates goes up in smoke. Charity. This is, again, the cover of the Metro. Bill Gates Charitable Foundation has pulled the plug on a $5.2 million grant to a Canadian initiative to curb smoking in Africa. It nixed the project after learning the chair of the International Development Research Center, Mulroney-era Cabinet Minister Barbara McDougall, was on the board of directors at Imperial Tobacco Canada. Neil Collishaw of Physicians for a Smoke-Free Canada says a key African partner in that project also withdrew its support over concerns the tobacco industry may be influencing the Canadian agency. First of all, Bill Gates and his initiatives in Africa, you got to know Bill Gates, number one, not the richest man in the world, not even close. I mean, the royal families and the Queen of England and Queen Beatrix, and the Rothschilds and their family being in the banking industry, according to their own website at Rothschild.org, for over 200 years. They're clearly richer. Rockefeller's richer. And some of the industrialists, Richard Mellon Scaife and Carnegie and those families, they're richer than Gates. But Gates is a convenient front man and someone that we can shout out as being the richest man in the world. And it keeps our eye off them if we think it's Bill Gates. So that's number one on Bill Gates. Number two, Bill Gates is part of a project called Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccination and Immunization. And Gavi, G-A-V-I, is a group that you may not have heard of, but they are exceptionally powerful in international medical industrial activist circles, because they're composed of some of the wealthiest people in the world and some of the biggest drug companies in the world. And they are basically carrying out, according to notable researchers in notable anti-vaccine researchers, doctors who've read, the literature, studied it, and then presented their findings to people like myself who go, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Gavi is basically carrying out the NSSM 200 Kissinger depopulation strategy from National Security Study Memorandum 200 in the early 1970s. Henry Kissinger released a document saying that third world populations and control of third world populations in 13 key countries and the reduction of those populations is a key towards maintaining U.S. national security interests. And so we have to make sure we reduce those populations and keep them as low as possible. And ways have been suggested for about 100 years by different New World Order philosophers of doing this, including vaccinations. And vaccinations contain heavy metals, just like chemtrails contain heavy metals. And for years, since lead pipes in the Roman Empire, people have figured out that heavy metals are no good for the old brain. And so if you do toxify your population with heavy metals through vaccinations, through aerial spraying, through mercury and things like corn syrup and cornstarch. I'm looking at my can of Arizona iced tea here. I used to keep my voice from cracking and to keep me from licking my lips too much during the show. And it says here, the third ingredient after premium brewed green tea using filtered water, the second ingredient rather is high fructose corn syrup or glucose fructose syrup. And that's been found, an article in the Washington Post last year revealed, to contain high levels of mercury. So we are being dumbed down at a phenomenal rate. And with respect to this article about smoking in Africa and this little smoking controversy, well, to be perfectly honest, it's just a nonsensical non sequitur. It's a giant game. All these people know it's a game at the top. The cancer industry is a big game. You know, their job is to make money and fulfill their function. You know, just like people in Iraq or Afghanistan who say, yeah, I know these wars are BS. I know there was no WMDs. I know there's no reason in hell to be here. I know that, you know, half of us are fighting, you know, random people in random places. And the other half of us are guarding the opium fields over in Afghanistan, the poppy fields to grow opium for the international heroin trade. But I'm doing my job. And as long as I do my job in this horribly evil system, even if it's an evil job, then I might be fine. And so that's what they think. No smoke, no pain. Ban may be keeping people out of hospitals. This is a study. A ban on smoking in Toronto restaurants may be paying big dividends, a new study suggests. And they're really going after smoking. And keep in mind, the Nazis went after smoking back in the day. And it's a way of social control. You introduce an addictive substance, and then people get addicted, and then you have an excuse to control them because you can say, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that. And it's like, what are you talking about? You put this out here. You allow the cigarette companies to make it extra addictive on your watch, and now you're knocking me for smoking. Well, screw you. There's also anecdotal evidence provided by Alan Watt at CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com and others of the fact that many people in areas where there's been spraying say that for some reason people who smoke cigarettes are smarter than those who don't, and maintain more of their faculties during the spraying and after the spraying. And it sounds crazy. I'm not trying to promote cigarette smoking as a way to beat chemtrails here. Just, you know, you don't need scientists for everything, and scientists lie on a regular basis. You need people. You need honest people that aren't getting a grant to prove something for a drug company, that aren't getting, you know, paid off to do whatever, that don't have some sort of agenda. You just need people going, you know what? Around here they spray chemtrails, and we find that the people that smoke manage to maintain a bit more of their mental faculties. And one of the reasons for this, it has been posited, and again, more research, or at least more anecdotal evidence would need to be discovered. It's been posited that something about the nicotine or tar coating your lungs keeps some of the, you know, chemtrail goop from being absorbed by you. You know, it's tougher for you to absorb some of that disorienting chemtrail goop. And so that might be a big reason why yesterday the New World Order was spraying us with chemtrails, and today on the cover of Metro, there are two key articles about smoking. A random one about how Bill Gates won't give a grant to help stop smoking in Africa because a member of the International Development Research Center, Barbara McDougall, was also on the board of directors at Imperial Tobacco Canada. Whatever. Why is that on the cover? Who knows? You know, there's a couple of Blue Jays in the summer, and it says Boys of Summer are back. That I get. Paris Hilton. Paris may be living the single life again. Cover shot of cute little Paris Hilton, and in Celebrity News on page 45 here. So that, I mean, these things make sense, but this random two smoking ads, no smoke, no pain. Ban may be keeping people out of hospitals, again on the cover. So they are really attacking smoking. They're really trying to get us to attack smoking. And, I don't think people should smoke. You know, but I do think people should do what they want. And so, you know, And the idea behind this is to make sure that we endorse a culture where people don't. But that notwithstanding, I'm gonna flip to a clip in a sec of one of their larger agenda plans. An interview I did last night with my colleague Dan Dix at PressForTruth.ca. They're working on a new film called United We Fall about the North American Union, the SPP.gov North American Union. When you see all sorts of incremental deals being announced, Harper and Obama working together to help curb the threat of nuclear terrorism, where terrorists could possibly, as Harper said yesterday, possibly acquire nuclear weapons, possibly enrich them, possibly blow up cities. So we got to launch crazy programs together. When you see agreements to allow FBI and other American security forces to operate in Canada during times of crisis or if they're chasing a suspect and vice versa, when you see all these incremental deals and public-private partnerships where basically government is selling off publicly owned assets and publicly owned services to the private sector in the hopes that they'll manage them better and be more responsive to us, then you can see the plans for the North American Union being implemented piecemeal. But regardless, Dan Dix at PressForTruth.ca, who in full disclosure is at times my boss, kind of J. Jonah Jameson to my Peter Parker. Parker, get in here. We need more pictures of that web crawling menace. I wonder where that is.
Hey, yo, this is Danny Boy. You listen to the audacity of Coke. La Coca Nostra.
Different clip. I just recorded this interview yesterday. My apologies, folks. I'm going to try and find this. If I can't find this, then I will find it for Thursday. Oh, that's why. I know why. All right. So the bottom line is that that the powers that be evil are going for a world government. As part of that step, they are looking for a North American Union, the merger of Canada, America, and Mexico into a new political and economic entity without our permission. So I'm going to let Dan Dix from PressForTruth.ca break down a little bit more of this. And again, in the interest of full disclosure, he is my boss when I do work for PressForTruth.ca, but he's an honest guy with a great film, and he and Brian Lahr are doing phenomenal work. So go to PressForTruth.ca to see more and check this out. April 12th, 2010, this is BK reporting for CKLN Radio here with Mr. Dan Dix, editor and owner of the journalism company PressForTruth.ca. Dan, how are you and what you been up to?
I am doing great. Been really busy lately working on a new film with Brian Law. We're working on a new film called United We Fall. We started working on it in the summer of 2008, so it's been almost 2 years now, and it's really, really coming along. We have a release date set for Canada Day, July 1st, this summer. It'll be out. Still got a bit of work to do on it. We're still doing the music on it and working on a DVD package and also contacting places to license their footage and this and that. But as soon as we get all that done, we'll be ready to put it out there. I'm pretty excited about it.
Sounds good. So people can obviously find out more at PressForTruth.ca. But before they do, tell us a bit about why you would make a film called United We Fall and what that film is about.
Well, the film basically documents the push towards a North American Union and subsequently the how it's another step towards a one-world government. So we touch on trade agreements chronologically, starting with the GATT, going into the FTA, then NAFTA, then SPP, and basically how that is going to lead towards North American Union. We had the luck, really, to interview some big major players. We've interviewed Bilderberg members, Trilateral Commission members, CFR members, a lot of the major players who are pushing for this thing, and we've gotten their opinion on it. So that's a big thing about this film, which I think makes it somewhat groundbreaking. I mean, we're getting from the horse's mouth their opinions on the idea of a North American Union, and so people, when they see the film, they'll be able to make up for their own minds whether they think this is a good idea or not. So yeah, that's what we've been focusing on.
And a little teaser with Mr. Dan Dix from PressForTruth.ca. Well, just a few minutes left in the show. Got to break down a few other key details. But again, go to PressForTruth.ca for more on that. The bottom line is, yes, Mr. Dan Dix and Mr. Brian Law did interview people like Alan Gottlieb and other top prominent globalists, basically. People who agreed, you know, just because a young film crew wanted to interview them, to sit down with these guys and to break down the skinny. And this is the way they've really been, you know, trained to think. You know, they've been trained to think that that globalization is inevitable, and their selling of it is a good thing. And if they sell it well enough, the powers that be evil at the top will help guarantee them you know, some tenure. You'll get a guy like Hans Grubel, the father of the Amero, the idea of the Amero, who admits in an interview done by PressForTruth.ca that that he's been paid very handsomely for his work. To basically work out strategies to create a common currency for North America, Canada, America, and Mexico, like the euro. And a lot of academics have. The experts are hired because we believe experts. They're not necessarily hired to do expert things or do a good job. They're hired because they know if they can put somebody on TV. And on TV, they used to say on the CBC, on other news broadcasts, early on in the war on terror, they would say, this is so-and-so from the Cato Institute. This is so-and-so from the Heritage Foundation, a right-wing think tank. But that language started changing, and it just became, we're here with our terror expert. And they just say terror expert to define who these people are these days. So you can see a reduction in the language and in our ability to comprehend who is blowing smoke up where. But yeah, in the Metro here, appeal denied in cop corruption case. Trial of five Toronto officers set to move ahead after years of delays. That's how arbitrary the system is, folks, and all these systems and all these institutions. You know, if the courts say someone's guilty, are they guilty? If the courts say someone's innocent, are they innocent? Are the courts themselves something that we can trust consistently? And which is why we always have to look for the bigger picture and the new world order structure within which all of this operates. So to help you do that, you can go to places like Infowars.com. I'm here right now. And checking out a couple of our articles. There's a lot of activism going on here. Alex Jones and his team had a naked body scanner contest where basically people would you know, create videos to help protest the idea of naked body scanners. And so you can go see the first naked body scanner contest entries at Infowars.com right now, because that's the type of thing you can do. You know, people say, what can you do? And they really mean, what can you do? Like, can you order the New World Order to be, you know, destroyed like you can order a Whopper at Burger King? No. But what you can do is you can express yourself creatively and innovatively and in an empowering way that can empower others and get rid of a little frustration. Cut loose over the state of the world. Don't just try and escape it, because every time you escape it and you come back, it smacks you twice as hard because your response is to escape. So definitely Infowars.com. Income has fallen 3.2% since Obama took office. Again, he's just the latest salesman for the plan of the New World Order, the globalist behind the scenes. So keep that in mind. It says here, leaked U.S. document calls for global regime, that's in quotes, to tackle climate change. Again, they're two big weapons, the war on terror to fool the right, the global warming or climate change rapture to fool the left with environmental issues into pushing for a global government and for more policing of all of us. So, again, tons and tons of stuff here on InfoWars, and a lot of these are links to mainstream news articles. There's one here from the Associated Foreign Press, which says Ahmadinejad, the leader of Iran, has written to the UN's Ban Ki-moon, asking him to launch an investigation into the September 11th, 2001 attacks in the United States. This is from France 24. So this really was an Associated Foreign Press article, but if you don't see, you know, the French newspaper, if you don't get it delivered to your door, or you don't visit their website, then you might miss that article if you don't find it at InfoWars.com, where they try and find the best of the rare mainstream news to give you more interesting information, as well as more valuable information for making sense of this. Vaccine contamination, pig virus DNA found in Rotarix. And the FDA was right to suspend the use of the Rotarix vaccine until they know more, according to Barbara Lowe Fisher, a medical doctor. So you're going to get these things out there that will cause you to question the institutions that run our society for their perpetual failure and for bringing us to an era here in the early part of the 21st century that's just riddled with crises. You get all these massive organizations, institutions, foundations. You get the United Nations. You get huge activist groups. And this is where they've taken us. So it's time to start questioning some of their decisions. Go to InfoWars.com to help you do that. Go to naturalnews.com for excellent health information, trendsresearch.com for some wealth information, or the internationalforecaster.com, cuttingthroughthematrix.com for Alan Watt's phenomenal work, a great Canadian who will give you a philosophical way to interpret the world you see. So when you see that Lady Gaga movement poster or Rihanna poster that says join the movement, and you see the one eye, and you see the little red communist star, and then flipped upside down, a Baphomet Satan head logo with 99.9 or 666, you know, over it, upside down. It just says Virgin with a red star, 99.9. But you can actually see stuff like that on your own. You don't have to be told something crazy's happened to pass it on. You can see the crazy stuff around you, and that means you can identify it. That means you can speak on it. That means you can help stop it, or at least mitigate its effects. So cuttingthroughthematrix.com, a great site for that. And locally, definitely groups to get involved in include TorontoTruthSeekers.com. We are trying to formulate a response to the G20, as is Dan Dix, Brian Law, and other members of PressForTruth.ca, another great site. ConspiracyCulture.com, great book and DVD store. Lots of big plans for Freedom Fest coming up from sort of 4/20, April 20th through to March 2nd. The Toronto Street News, flip a homeless guy a toonie and show him some love, because in these days and times when we're all suffering economically, you can only imagine how they're doing. The freedomlink.org, great site to network patriots worldwide and here in Canada and America in particular. So, you know, it's important for us to remember what we're supposed to be capable of in a democracy. So I'm going to leave you with Pressure by Ice Cube and Killer Mike, and I'm going to pass you on to Mr. Colin Smith, who's got 4 hours of One Flight Up coming up. Have a great day, everybody.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro. That's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? What was your name? It couldn't have been Smith or Jones or Brunt or Powell. That wasn't your name. They don't have those kind of names where you and I came from. No, what was your name? And why don't you now know what your name was then? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Motherfuckers, I just bought some new chuckers. The old ones bloodied up from stomping out old suckers. Big bang killer, big black gorilla. King Kong on you monkey ass niggas. Step and fetch funky ass niggas. Dick in the booty for your mouth ass niggas. I don't fear no man. Not Bush, not Clinton, not Osama. Ask your Uncle Thomas how he choose mass over Obama. You could have $1 million and a white collar. Liberation costs more than a damn dollar. It costs what Christ gave.